We'd like to take a moment to talk about Jane, one of our sponsors who helped make this episode possible. Jane is a practice management software built for every kind of mental health practitioner and is thoughtfully designed with your clients in mind. Jane makes it convenient to meet with individuals, couples, or families, whether that's online, via Jane's telehealth options, or in person.
From day one, you can expect unlimited customer support through onboarding that sets you up for success and a 99.99% software reliability that ensures that Jane is always ready to start the day with you.
Just as you are always learning and improving, Jane is too. The team at Jane values customer feedback and uses it to design even more helpful features. So you can think of Jane as a software that grows with you.
If you're curious to see Jane in action, head to jane.app/mentalhealth/US to book a free one-on-one demo. You can also mention the code DCPOD at sign up for a 2-month free grace period on your new Jane account.
I'm really excited and slightly anxious to announce that my book, The Autistic Burnout Workbook, is releasing this next week. It comes out March 11th. It's available for pre-order right now. I am trying to avoid falling back into burnout. When you release a book, there is a lot of pressure to do promotion and to market and to get the word out there. So this is my burnout prevention form of marketing. I'm running a special right now for those who are supporting my work through pre-ordering. You can submit that information after you pre-order, and we will get you a coupon code that you can use toward our store for the same amount. So the workbook costs $18.99. So then you'd get $18.99 to use in our digital shop or in our Etsy shop, which would get you another digital workbook for free. So you buy one workbook and then you get a digital one for free. That is the promotion I'm running. It's technically a pre-order promotion, but I've been a bit behind on getting the word out. So for listeners of the podcast, I'm going to extend that. If you buy the book in the next month, you can go ahead and redeem the special. The link for that is in the notes below. Thank you so much for supporting my work. It means so much to me, and I just really appreciate you and hope that you will find this a helpful resource for you as you continue to build a life that is a bit more resilient to autistic burnout.
Hey, everyone. You are listening to the Divergent Conversations podcast. We are two neurodivergent mental health professionals in a neurotypical world. I'm Patrick Cassell.
And I'm Dr. Neff.
And during these episodes, we do talk about sensitive subjects, mental health, and there are some conversations that can certainly feel a bit overwhelming. So we do just want to use that disclosure and disclaimer before jumping in. And thanks for listening.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Diverging Conversations. I feel like I can say this with more energy than I did last week. So that
I was just going to say, you've got a little pep in your step.
A little bit. I feel like I'm skipping now, half skipping. You've been mentioning how we're going to be like frolicking or skipping.
Well, we sent a few gifts back. I sent you an Eeyore gif with a cloud raining, and then I sent a gif of skipping. You can guess which one is who.
Can you though? Because your pace is like slowing majorly. So now you're like, maybe you're taking over my space. I don't know. We'll see.
I know. Last week I had a lot of energy. This week, well, I am starting to get a little. I'm getting a cold. But yeah, this week I'm kind of back in what is my more typical baseline, but I will bring as much pep as I can muster. Not that I have to. That's interesting.
No, but you don't have to. And yeah, we want to like be our true selves here. So whichever energy shows up is fine with me. And today we are going to do a continuation of worn down and worthy, not worthless. Hashtag not your typical wellness, but we are going to talk about creativity today. And you mentioned something off air that caught my ear, like, we'll figure it out as we go. And for me, that's like creativity in a nutshell. That's like the foundation of everything that I do that is creative, is like, I'll figure it out as I go. And I'm just curious what creativity means for you.
Ooh, that's a good question. So my brain went to Karl Marx. Isn't it so fun? the way I answer questions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Anna, what does creativity mean to you? Well, let's talk about Karl Marx.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Don't worry, we're not trying to get on any radars, and we will get on more radars.
Oh, right. Shoot. I mean, KM. Let's talk about KM.
Yeah.
So KM, so I studied sociology in undergrad.
Yep.
So like when I say KM, I'm talking about like KM proper, not what his theory became, because his writing and then what his theory became like have some differences. He has this theory that as soon as I learned it, I was like, it's been one of those anchoring theories for me. But it's the whole idea of kind of alienation of labor, which is also about alienation from our humanness and our human nature. What he was concerned about was this shift that was happening where we started putting a price on our labor, right? So your labor's worth $7 an hour.
Hashtag and, capitalism.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can buy it.
Yep.
So what he talks about is how creation, so like crafting a chair, is an expression of our humanness. It's how we express our human nature. So once we alienate from our labor, and then it's like, we sell it for this amount, we're also alienating from our humanness. So creativity for me is connection to my humanness and my human nature and an expression of my humanness.
Yeah, I love that. I really like that, like how that's interwoven, because when I'm feeling creative or in a flow state or just, I just feel better. I feel more alive. I feel more connected to the people in the world around me and just my environment. I know we've talked so much about like the ADHD side of creativity and the romanticism of what creativity can lead to. And sometimes it is like chasing that feeling in a lot of ways, because I really need that to feel sparked or alive or energetic or just human, like you're mentioning. Mm-hmm. I think humanness is really a good anchoring point for that.
Well, humanness and aliveness, because you're right. Yeah. For me too, it's feeling connected to aliveness.
Yeah,
absolutely. And this is a thought I've been sitting with this week, is how, you know, we're recording and it's end of April now. How important it is that we find those anchor points to hold on to our humanness right now and our aliveness. There's a lot of forces right now that want us to dehumanize, that want us to dissociate, and. Yeah. Finding practices where we can hold on to ourselves, where we can hold on to our humanity is so important right now.
It's one of the purest forms of resistance in a way, right?
Yeah.
It's like anchoring into being alive and human and connected. It kind of ties back to our conversation about community. And I think being creative in within your community is so important too, like to share that mutual like community creativity process and that exchange of energy and that exchange of ideas, even like super important for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that the way you just described it, it sounds like play. And I think play is so, so beautiful, and mutual play. And that's hard for us. It's hard for us to play, but it's hard for us to play with others.
Yeah. Yeah. And weirdly, you know, speaking of like that and parallel play, and I played soccer for the first time in 13 months the other day.
Yeah, how'd that go?
Me, like exactly what we're talking about, just that humanness, that, and there is creativity right in sport. There's creativity in tactic. There's creativity in like how you show up and approach the game. And for me, it makes me feel alive. It makes, you know, coming back from a major injury and, felt really good afterwards. I mean, my body definitely let me know that I'm almost 39 and so much slower than all of our 25-year-old teammates. But, you know, it was good to be back out there, and it just felt really like exhilarating for me. And I need more of that in my life too.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that you're able to access that again, like access movement. I know you've had a lot of like pain stuff and the calf thing, and that's huge. And that also speaks to like creativity, like embodied creativity. It went like music, dance, sports, soccer, like that is huge.
It is. Movement is so important for us, right? Like we talk about it. I live, and I know both of us kind of lead at times a very sedentary lifestyle. And my body acknowledges that. Like, I feel stiff. I feel a lot of chronic pain. And I'm like, damn, I went outside for 20 minutes today and sat outside with my dog. And I was like, I should probably take my wife's advice where she tells me I need to leave the house once a day. But, you know, like, it just helps me feel more connected to the nature around me, too. I live in a really beautiful part of the country, as do you. And the weather's really nice here right now. And it just, that also helps me feel creative. It also helps me feel alive and connected. And I need that change of scenery or environment to often feel creative and connected.
I love that you went there, because it is like often we need, I mean, sometimes it comes internally, but we often need like external sparks for our creativity, especially if we are like in a season of fatigue or low energy. And that spark can be, for me too, like sunshine. So getting like in my backyard, I live in a forested area. So when there's sunshine and I can go back there and there's green space, that is, so even if I'm feeling low, that can spark it. Or sometimes it'll be a conversation or an idea, but having those external sparks and knowing what they are, that's been huge for me. Cause I, especially when I'm low, I need someone to pull it out of me, or someone or something to pull it out of me.
Yeah. I can totally relate to that. That brings us, you know, that brings my mind back to like a lot of what we've been saying and joking around about, of like, we know what to do, right? To like take care of ourselves, and how often do we do it? And I think so often, sometimes with a lot of guilt of like, damn, I live in an area that a lot of people come to for vacation. And like, it's really, really beautiful from spring to fall. How often do I immerse myself in it? And it's, the answer is not very often. And I always say to myself, I'm going to do more of this year. And I really would like to. Even when we did our, we were trying to hold each other accountable last year to like more movement and things like that. It lasted for like a week and a half, two weeks.
We were sending photos back and forth. Like whenever I'd get on the bike, I would send you a bike pic. That's great. I forgot why did that we did it like lead up to Belize, and then it kind of stopped.
Life, you know, and life sometimes really gets in the way, and our own emotional experiences and physical experiences and fatigue. Like, there's so many things that happen. And I think that's why we so often are looking for that spark, you know, is to, like you said, drag us out of those spaces where we are feeling really low energy, and just getting through the day feels like a lot. And I know that's a reality for a lot of you listening, is like just getting through the day. And, go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, that's like, it's a double-edged sword, right? Because we probably have to have some energy to access creativity, but then creativity gives us energy. So it's like, how do I set the conditions? I think about this a lot. Like, how do I set the conditions to experience the thing I want to experience? Yeah. And so I can't force creativity out of me. I can't force energy. So the other day, Monday, I told you, I my mood, my energy had been high for a while. And then Monday I kind of felt it crash. And I like, nothing sounded good. It was the kind of day of like, nothing sounds good. Nothing in life sounds good.
Sure.
But I was like, okay, it's sunny out. Yesterday, I would have seen the sun and been like, oh my gosh, it's sunny. I'm going to go outside. And I'm so excited. So, but on Monday, I was like, it's sunny out. I should go out. I'll feel better if I do.
My energy really rubbed off on you.
And I did it. And I did feel better. I was like, okay, I'm getting out of this funk.
Yeah.
I've set the conditions.
And sometimes it's just like that little task, right? It doesn't have to be something monumental. And I think, like you said, knowing the conditions are really important, because everyone's going to be a little bit different in that regard. And for me, when I'm feeling like that, when I'm like, ooh, I really need some stimulation, I really need like a little spark, and I need to force myself out of this, my instinct is to reach out for connection. And it's always because I've allowed myself to go too far in the opposite end. And that's what I was kind of mentioning to you prior to us recording, is I had offered connection and community to autistic and ADHD therapists here in Asheville. And usually I don't want to do those things ever. And it just came over me, and I was like, I'm just going to put it out there. of course, when it came up on my calendar, maybe my PDA surfaced and I was like, I think I'm just going to no-show this and maybe nobody will come. But I put myself out there, got into that situation, went and got coffee for an hour, and it felt really good. And it just felt like really humanizing to just be around four other autistic humans mm-hmm. and to share some fears about what has been happening, but also to share some joys and like things that are going really well in our lives and things that we're maybe consuming content wise or media wise and shows that we've been watching. And it was just a great, I kind of phrased it in the post of like, there's no need for eye contact. There's no need for small talk. Mm-hmm. We don't need to like stumble over how we're going to say hello to each other. Let's just show up as we want to show up. And like, let's really let that be as low stress and low stakes as possible. And that was really cool too. Of course, everyone kind of went to shake my hand or hug me. And then we did the awkward, like, I don't know what to do.
Oh my gosh. That is always awkward. I love that you did that. I love that you did that.
That's kind of my instinct is like when I'm in that place and I need to get pulled out of it. I really do need to seek that out more. And I feel like combating that isolation, that loneliness, that depression, that grief, whatever it is, that exhaustion counterintuitively by being like, I need to be around people. And that's when I really know that's what I really need to.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So there's this idea I really like, and I think I've actually shared it on a previous episode on when we talked about burnout, but it comes from an article that was talking about burnout, and it's bugging me that I can't remember the author's names right now, but we'll link it in show notes. So they talked about this idea of strategic social withdrawal. So withdrawal, what you're describing, like when you retreat into yourself, when you're in low energy, low mood, that like as mental health providers, we often see withdrawal and that's a red flag that like the depression's worsening or maybe the PTSD or the anxiety is worsening because maybe we're withdrawing to avoid the triggers for anxiety.
Yep.
But I loved this frame of strategic social withdrawal, which is sometimes autistic people do this to manage our sensory and energy spoons.
Yep.
But what is so important, for autistic people is then I think we can get into a pattern of like, well, this is self-care for me to withdraw. Right. But it isn't always like there's sure. adaptive withdrawal and there's maladaptive withdrawal. There's withdrawal that serves us and withdrawal that doesn't. So what I'm right. hearing you say in that is like, yeah, sometimes it actually is good for me to push through demand avoidance or I don't even like the language push through stretch. I like the language of stretch to stretch yeah. beyond the demand avoidance and to seek out connection. Yeah. And so here's a loaded question. How do you know, or how did you know the difference between I'm withdrawing because like I'm tired and I just need replenishing versus, oh, this kind of withdrawal is putting me in a dark space. And I think stretching beyond it would be good for me. Like, how did you know?
Yeah. I love that you just kind of said like adaptive or did you say adaptive and maladaptive?
Adaptive and maladaptive or helpful okay. and unhelpful. Yeah.
Yeah. So adaptive withdrawal for me, I think is easy to pinpoint and I can use like reference points of like coming home from hosting a retreat. Adaptive withdrawal for me is like, I've been around people for 5 days. I've had to host, I'm exhausted, travel, blah, 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 blah. Adaptive withdrawal is really just like lay on the couch in the dark, watch shows that I like, not have anything on my calendar. It's perfect. It's actually like, I've really leaned into that, that cycle. And honestly, some of our episodes over the last 2 years have helped with that. Maladaptive withdrawal. Okay. I talked about grief on one of our episodes a couple of weeks ago. And grief, I allowed it to be there. I allowed myself to experience the emotion of the loss that I had gone through, coupled with the fear of just being an autistic person in this country right now. It was not a good combination for me. I acknowledge that like retreating a bit was healthy and protective, but it gets to a point where then everything causes concern. I start to pick up on like everything. I'm way more hypervigilant. I'm way more fearful. Things that maybe are worth being worried about become like really big situations, right? Like catastrophe sized situations. those are the times where I'm like, okay, I think I need to be around like some other humans, and I'm allowed to just go and be myself and be vulnerable, but I also don't have to be ruminating in things that are causing me a lot of distress and creating further and further like slippage into this like abyss almost.
I love that you know your tells like that, and that, okay, the kind of a like paranoia-ish thinking starts to take root. Hypervigilance goes up. This is where I know this is not no longer serving me. In my head now, of course, I'm seeing like a worksheet where it's like identifying like the signals of like, this is an adaptive withdrawal. This is a maladaptive or helpful, unhelpful. I kind of like, those are softer words.
Yeah.
Because that's huge. First of all, that you have that awareness of like, okay, this is what happens when I'm withdrawing to this degree. And I know what to do to kind of help me stretch out of this cycle.
Totally. And this goes back to like our episode on community and connection, where I did have people like yourself and some other good friends who were reaching out to me to see if I was okay. And after a couple of those messages from people who you trust to know, like they're worried about you, that's when it's also an indication for me of like, maybe this is an indication that like things are really slipping really quickly, and I really need to try to almost do some stabilization or some regulation in that way.
Also, it reminds me of the episode, our first episode of this season, where we talked about attachment. Like you have a lot of awareness that for you getting out of that, you need attachment, you need connection to get out of that.
Yeah. What about for you? Same question.
Yeah. No, I was like feeling the hot potato. I was like, oh no, Patrick might ask me and I don't know if I have answers. So I think I like how you described it, of it's the experience of my internal world. So when it's adaptive, either I am resting, or I would say the most adaptive, I'm in a deeply creative space. I'm playing with ideas. So I'm alone, but I don't feel alone because I'm with ideas and I'm generative. Yeah. And that to me is kind of my happy place. Now there's times where I just need to withdraw because I'm exhausted.
Right.
And I probably need that, but it is hard for me because we've talked about hyperproductivity. I don't do well when I'm alone. So I said this thing, I wrote this out like a month ago. I said, I think I fill my head with ideas so that I don't have to be alone with my thoughts. Which feels like an OCD thing. And when
that totally hits home for me.
When I'm so fatigued that I can't engage ideas, that is not a great space for me. Because then I am tired and alone with my ideas.
Yeah.
Or no, I'm alone with my thoughts in that case. And it's weird because I do need the rest, but I also probably need connection. And it is really hard for me to reach for it when I'm in that place, especially when depression's in the mix. I just want everyone to F off. I need connection when I'm there. And it's really, really hard to reach out.
Absolutely. I think that's what makes a lot of this so hard, right? And we've talked about burnout so often and depression so often on here. And I know that we both experience both constantly. I know a lot of our listeners do too. And I think that's what makes it so hard is what you just described of like, I really need this thing, but it feels so hard to reach for it. I think that becomes so challenging.
And the people, this is where, back to community, having friends who get it, like I do feel like there's a small handful of people I feel like I could reach out to when it gets really heavy. You being one of them. And then a couple other people who they get the darkness. So I can share, I'm in this darkness and I won't worry them. I think that when I'm depressed, and I just think being a human, one of my least favorite experiences, talk about killing aliveness, is when people worry on me.
Yeah.
I hate that feeling of people worrying about me. But people do worry about me a lot because I, understandably, because I'm kind of a mess.
I get that. I experience that too. Maybe not to the severity that you do, but I do experience that. I almost get annoyed by it. I almost get like frustrated by it. And especially if it comes from specific people in my life. But
yeah.
Does that go back to like the hatred of being perceived in a lot of ways too? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like it feels weak. You're perceiving me in a and you're worrying about me, and then it feels, and then I feel perceived in my weakness, which is like, that's not cool for me. And then also I want to comfort your worry. So then I have to be okay to comfort your worry. Mm. So there's a lot going on in that moment for me.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely. Totally understandable. I think a lot of people can relate to that. It's that vulnerability and being perceived as quote unquote weak or vulnerable or struggling. And we all struggle, as we know, right? And we all suffer.
Well, and we're all struggling right now.
Is anyone out there, like, let us know, are you guys fucking thriving right now? Like, do you feel like you're like flourishing?
I think that's the title of your book, Patrick.
Are you fucking thriving right now? That's going to be my entrepreneurial book, and it's just going to be me, pictures of me jumping off the bridge in New Zealand over and over and over again on repeat. Mm-hmm. There's going to be no text. There's going to be no helpful statements. It's just going to be that. And yeah. Yeah, it's hard. You know, it is hard. And it's amazing how often this episode's fascinating to me, because we're talking creativity, but there's so much talk and linkage to connection community. Connection.
Mm-hmm. We keep coming back to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It makes sense. Like when I feel deeply alone, which I feel so often in my life, even when surrounded by people who love me, feel deeply alone. Those are the times, right, where creativity doesn't feel like it's even accessible to me. It's not even a thought. I can't even like create comprehensive thought processes or sentences at times, let alone projects or do things that make me feel good. And I think that's why traveling has been a big part of my creativity process, because I feel less alone when I am out in the world, even if I am traveling by myself. And I've never been able to truly understand that for my well-being, but I know I can differentiate between that aloneness versus the aloneness of my typical human experience. Mm.
I just had a thought that formed. And I'm curious if this feels true. I think the way you relate to experiences is the way I relate to ideas.
Mm. Yeah, I would agree with that. I would hold, yeah, absolutely. I get so excited about it, you know, and it's, I can tell. It's like, damn, in these moments, I feel really charismatic when I'm feeling like deeply connected to experience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's how I feel about ideas. So I go to that for aliveness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine's a little bit easier to access from home.
Yeah.
Sorry, Patrick.
That's a challenge for sure, because it's a catch-22 going back to like being a double-edged sword, right? Of like, there's so much that comes with travel. There's so much fatigue, exhaustion, money. There's other stressors, obviously. But man, when I'm in those moments, I feel so good. And it does create a problem where that can lead to that ADHD side of like, got to book the next trip. Got to figure out the next like thing to do in order to like feel alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So...
For both of us, they sound like immersive experiences, like where, and this, so I've talked about this before too, but the idea of quiet ego, I love this. It's, you know, in pop psychology, it's often like, don't have too much ego or have just enough ego, don't have too low of self-esteem. But what is really protective, and I think when we really are connected to our humanness and creativity and aliveness, is actually when we have quiet ego, when we are so immersed in something that it is not about us. And that's what I hear when you describe experiences. That's what I hear when I'm immersed in ideas and ideation, that's what I experience is. And it's so nice to have some reprieve from my mind, which is a weird thing to say, 'cause I'm talking about ideas, but it feels like a reprieve from my ego, from my mind. I'm connected to something bigger. I'm immersed in something. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I catch that same energy when you talk about being immersed in experience.
100%. It almost feels like torturous. You know, we've talked a lot about like, I don't know, just feel like there's this tortured process in a way of being a creative human. And I always think about like these tortured artists or creative types who have predated us for sure, and the world that they lived in and how they struggled so mightily with the things that we talk about, probably so many of them being autistic, ADHD, ADHDers, and how that really did make them feel alive, though, is like the creative portion, and when they could access that and immerse themselves into it. And that's how I feel so often. And it even allows me to be more connected to people that I meet, that I just feel like, wow, I actually get to be a part of the world. And that for me feels really unique and special, but hard to access on a day-to-day basis, obviously.
Well, it's so different from our baseline, right? Of feeling outside of our experience, outside of the world. So, so when we get pockets of, I feel in the world, I feel connected to this moment, I feel connected to others, I feel connected to being an alive being on this planet.
Yep.
That is, it is so powerful.
Yeah. How do we bottle that and sell it?
I mean, maybe that's like, would it be as valuable, you know, if we did always have it? And that's where grief and desire, like grief or grief and joy, like they walk so close together. Cause if that was our baseline, it would be water and we'd.
Yeah. It would be very diluted. Right. And I think about when we had Jennifer on this podcast, when we did like the neurotypical episode, mm-hmm. and it feels very much like her experience in life is just like, I'm just flowing through it and mm-hmm. I make the best of these situations and I'm okay in all these environments. And I'm like, damn, mm-hmm. that sounds magical. But then I reframe to like, exactly what you just said of, how would I be able to differentiate between the duality of life of like grief mm-hmm. and joy and, you know, connection versus isolation and loneliness, and like really separate the two that intensely? I don't know if I could do it. I obviously have no idea.
And maybe that is why there's so many of us that are tortured artists, is because of that very intense juxtaposition of, I have moments of tasting intense aliveness and then it's gone. But I know how incredible that is. And I have grief that I know that exists and I can't access that right now.
Mm-hmm. Juxtaposition. Great word for this. Yes, absolutely that. I think that's exactly it. But the problem is there can be a dark side to that too, of trying so hard to get it back.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's where a lot of us can go to like chemicals and other ways of trying to like get that experience back,
for
that
sure.
experience of aliveness back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oof, man. Stuff
we're in
home.
It. Yeah.
Mm. So one thing.
Go ahead. I mean, this is really dark. So if you're pivoting us.
No, go ahead.
I don't know. This is the kind of thing where I'm like, I'm going to ask permission for us to maybe edit this out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'll ever go into more detail on the mood swings I've been noticing in myself. Maybe we'll see. But I've had an interesting season of having a lot of in the last month, having a lot of aliveness and having having happiness, which is not a normal thing for me, and also weird given everything happening in the world.
Yeah.
And there's context around that. But I had a conversation with Luke, my spouse, like a week or two ago, and talking about this experience. And part of it is my mind's been running a little bit faster. And I felt like I've been seeing things so clearly, and I've been so connected to my aliveness. And I'm like, there's so much I want to do. And now I actually feel like I have energy to do some of it, which usually like fatigue has just been such a huge part of my life the last few years. And I started crying to Luke, and I was like, I feel like I've come out of a, the metaphor or the image in my head is like, I've been in a coma and I feel out of it, but I know it's coming back for me. And that's going to be so hard when it comes back, because like, I've tasted this. And even with my energy dipping now, I'm like, I don't want to go back. Like, I don't want to go back to that. That fatigue and that lethargy and that lifelessness. And for people who do live with big energy and mood swings, I think that's part of the pain of it, of you tap into how good things can be, how alive things can be, and then you lose access to that.
Thank you for sharing that. That's really powerful and sounds really painful too. Like, there's a lot of grief there.
This whole being human thing, Patrick.
Don't recommend, eh?
I do recommend, though, because I do recommend. I just wish I could spend less of my life what feels like often in a coma state.
I think that a lot of people listening are going to relate to that. And I certainly do as well. And I do recommend it too, right? Like, without that pain, without that suffering, without that acknowledgement, maybe we're not sitting here today together. I don't know.
I don't think we would be. No, we connected on pain, and we connected on, we connected in our pain, and we connected in our aliveness and our creativity. Yeah. And that's why we work. And that's like, our friendship holds both of that. And I think that's part of what makes our friendship so special.
And it's really hard to find people, you know, who you don't have to over explain things to, you know, when things are not skipping in sunshine. I appreciate you sharing that. I want to just show, I don't want to minimize it at all, because we can sit in this moment as long as you want to. I just want to highlight what I was about to say, because it is like the stupidest shit in comparison.
Yeah, help us come back up from our intensity with your stupid shit.
Okay, so if you're not watching, I'm just using my hands to really diverge on these pathways where we're both about to speak at the same time. And I was literally going to say, so one tip for creativity is that I have all of my special interests all around me. And I'm like looking at pictures of Ted Lasso and Anthony Bourdain and The Lord of the Rings and animals that I really like. And it just sounds so stupid.
I love that. I love that so much. That delights me. Thank you. Thank you for that. So, to summarize, three tips for creativity. This podcast is so weird, because sometimes we are like, here's a few takeaways, and like, let's dive into existential human suffering. We are weird, and I love it. I'm here for
it. What makes this work? That's what makes this work, you know, and that's what people like about this podcast is that it's not artificial and fake and not just like, so here are five ways that you can be more creative in your home. My Shih Tzu is looking at me like, what is fucking happening right now? He picks up on all the energies. Get a neurodivergent dog, y'all. It's a blast. The level of neuroticism, amazing. 10 out of 10. No, I mean, I don't even know where to go right now. I think that was such a very powerful, relatable statement. And I just appreciate you being willing to share it and be that vulnerable, because I know it's hard and I can feel that pain in that statement too. And I can really relate to it. And I know. Yeah.
What comes up for you in your relation to it?
I just don't feel good very often, you know, whether it's in my body, in my brain, in my life. And those momentary blips are so special, but they're so painful simultaneously, which further complicates the specialness of them. because there is that pain of, I know this will not last forever. And I know what the alternative is. And I think a lot of people don't get that, you know, like, just use a positive reframe, or like, look at the bright side, or any pop positive psychology bullshit. Yeah, it's just so special, and it's so painful while being special. And it's weird to have that be like very simultaneously happening internally a lot of the time.
Yeah. This is, I feel like English is so limiting. I think other languages, and I'll look for like feedback from some of our listeners for this. Cause I feel like there's other languages where that experience you're describing is, there's a word for it, for the complex emotion of that. I mean, the closest we get in English is bittersweet, which doesn't even do it. It doesn't even like do it justice. But I think there are some words that capture that, like, this is so much pleasure and this will end. And so there's grief in that. And that, I think it sounds weird, but I feel like that is one of my most favorite. It's one of my most favorite human emotions, but it also hurts. Like, it hurts in my stomach because there's longing in it.
For sure.
But it's I enjoy the combo of pleasure and pain, and that emotional experience is a pleasure pain. And so when I can kind of let myself be in it, it's a painful experience, but it's also one of my favorite, favorite's not the right word. It's one of my most kind of connected, alive emotions when I get to have that experience. It's also, I think, where I'm the most creative in my writing and my thinking, is that where I'm in something that is both longing and pleasure and grief and pain.
Yeah, I relate to that 100%. And I think that is also when I feel the most creative, is in that vortex of like pleasure, pain, grief, aliveness, connectedness, all of the things happening simultaneously. Being able to voice that, you know, like being able to put words to it, being able to express it, it feels cathartic in so many ways. Bittersweet doesn't do it justice.
It barely touches it. This is so interesting. I had no idea what was going to open up when we started a conversation on creativity. And I feel like there's a lot, kind of the messaging around ADHD is creativity, novelty, thinking outside the box, which is all true and good, but there's a deeper conversation here that also is true, which is when you're deeply connected to humanness and pain and grief and you metabolize it, that can also connect us to our creativity. And that also is probably a fuel for many neurodivergent creatives. It is our pain. It is our suffering. It is the fact that even with that, we're saying, aliveness is also like amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Couldn't say that better myself, which means that we're going to
say. Means awkward goodbye. Wait. One last thought.
Sure.
Creativity as metabolization. So creativity, I think, helps us hold on to our humanity, which we need right now, and our humanness. But I also think creativity can help us metabolize all of the heaviness that we've just been talking about. And there's a lot to metabolize right now. So I know for me, like the way I'm showing up in my writing and my essays has a different feel to it. Yeah. And it's because I'm choosing to lean into creativity and metabolizing emotions. And I think whether that is when I was in high school, it was like I journaled every night while listening to Linkin Park. And that was like, that's how I like survived adolescence. Creativity is also such a great way to metabolize. So if folks are just so overwhelmed right now, understandably, like finding some creative outlet to metabolize even an inch of the emotions that we're going through, I think is really important right now.
Yeah, no, I agree. Absolutely. It's really well said. That could be journaling. That could be all sorts of different things that you could be doing that could help a little bit. What were you going to say?
I was just going to give you permission to socialize right now.
One of the worst mistakes of my life, by the way, not going to this Linkin Park Festival concert. They were opening in Darien Lake, New York. I took a job as a waiter at a restaurant that was opening in my college town. And they were like, you have to be here for opening weekend. And I had to miss that concert. One of my biggest regrets of my life.
I didn't know you were a Linkin Park fan.
Loved Linkin Park back in the day.
Gosh.
I didn't like the current iteration, but like, yeah, that like Meteora album was definitely something that I just listened to on repeat constantly.
Oh my gosh. No, I literally like they had their CD because it was back when like CDs were a thing, and I listened to that CD on repeat when I was 15, 16, 17, 18. Like that was what I listened to.
Yep. That was my jam. And I think you're a couple years older than me, so I was probably 12, 13 at the time, just listening to it constantly. And it just made me feel like less angry. It made me feel more alive. It made me feel like more connected. I think that's why I love Anthony Bourdain so much. Speaking of creativity and immersing in experience, but I always have loved artists and people who have allowed themselves to just put it out there while also simultaneously acknowledging the pain and the suffering. And I think that's something I've always tried to do myself. And it's always helped me feel more connected to the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. And music has been huge for me, connected with like languishing souls through music who also get it. Right now, I don't know if you've listened to NF. I also get nervous. I like don't know who's controversial and who's not, because I'm really bad at staying on top of that. But like, so NF, he talks about having both OCD and ADHD. But especially the way he covers OCD is like, oh, he's naming something so true. So he's a big one. And Eminem back in the day, who he has a song where he talks about Asperger's. I don't know that he's like publicly claimed it, but Eminem was my college years. And also connected to his rage. Yeah. Music's so powerful.
Music, just so powerful. Being able to like get in your car and turn it up as loud as you want and just drive without any purpose was always so helpful for me.
Mm-hmm. That's what I did in high school. I would put Linkin Park on. I had this like 92 Toyota convertible, Celica. I loved it. I totaled it because ADHD. I was in a bad car accident. Not bad, but anyways, I would just get on the highway and listen to Linkin Park and just drive. And that's what I would do. Looking back, I think I also often did that when I was sensory overloaded, or if I was really depressed and needed something like else.
Yeah. Same. Didn't have that car, but same process.
It would have been interesting if our high school selves had met. I mean, yeah, I would have been like a senior when you were a sophomore, freshman.
How old are you?
I just turned 41 just last month.
You turned 39 in August, so it's pretty close.
So wait, what year did you graduate high school?
2004.
And I graduated 2002. So like, yeah, I would have been a senior. You would have been a sophomore. So that would have, yeah, we wouldn't have been friends for that reason. But otherwise, we would have been friends.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really have any friends very much. So it didn't really, wouldn't have been much different. It was just people on my soccer team. So
yeah, I
would have been interesting for sure.
Yeah. Well, if we'd known how to connect, we would have.
Close us out of this episode because we have another one to record and we don't even know what we're going to talk about yet. So stay tuned because so many exciting things are about to take place. Episodes are out on Fridays, major platforms, YouTube, like, download, subscribe, share, and join our Substack too that we just started. And we'll see you next week.